Hello, hello, and welcome back. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming back for the February Metroplexity podcast. It's been a while. I've been pretty under the weather for really almost a month, which has been pretty sucky, but I'm back on track now and adding some content and making some changes, and everything's actually looking pretty good. I do have a couple of announcements just to throw some salt in that wound, though. Next week, the 20th to the 25th, I will be on sort of vacation. I don't have anything planned for that week, so that doesn't impact the mid-March-ish date that I quoted for the end of the Survivor's Quest. So no worries about that. Hopefully I will actually get some stuff done anyway, because it's pretty much just a lazing around in Florida sort of vacation. I'm not, in fact, going to Disneyland, although my wife and her mom are. So that's pretty cool. She's also my wife that is going to a very secret, very awesome meeting that, if you remind me next time, I will tell you about. But it's pretty fucking cool, so that'll be exciting. In other news, my job search was actually, well, sort of successful in that I didn't find a new job, but my previous position got recreated, and they invited me back. So apparently I didn't suck at my old job. That'll actually be pretty good as far as Metroplexity goes. So we're talking about really working from home. Position is a little bit different. I think I will actually be doing less multitasking than I did previously, which will be good for at least doing like design stuff for Metroplexity while I'm working. I'll have some excess brain power. So that's looking pretty promising. And that actually starts March 8th. Let's see, other life news. Puyo still hasn't moved out here, but it's looking pretty much certain now. She finally talked to her dad. He was not happy, but that's kind of the way these things roll. And she's getting jobs worked out and is putting a security deposit down on an apartment and stuff like that. So that's looking pretty good. That, depending on if anything weird goes on there, that might lose me a day or two just to get out to Peoria and get her and bring her back and so forth, and the unpacking help and so forth. But probably nothing of import there. But that's really good news for Metroplexity. There's a couple of really neat things that'll allow us to do. First of all, I think it'll pretty noticeably decrease the turnaround time from initial design to when I'm done. Because what tends to happen right now is I'll do the initial design, figure out what art I need, send a request over to Puyo, and she'll send it back like a week or two later. And by that time, of course, I forgot everything that I had designed. So with that in mind, she will probably be able to give us a little bit better turnaround, because, I mean, we'll be seeing each other a lot, and I can, you know, lean on her to get art done, and, so, that'll also keep things fresher in my mind, so that should help, and it won't necessarily help us get more stuff done, but it'll definitely speed up the development cycle, which is pretty cool. Also means, I've been secretly considering doing custom avatars for quite a while, for, you know, PvP and your profile in the game, and that has been on hold until she's actually out here for basically the same reasons I was just talking about, like the turnaround time and being able to talk directly. So hopefully when she's out here we can start collaborating on that. I can start offering custom profiles for unearthly coins. We'll see exactly how that pans out, but something to look forward to, I guess. Let's see. I think that's all of the news that I've got. So there's a lot going on, and, you know, I'm terrible at scheduling to begin with, so I'm not going to pretend that the Survivor's Quest will absolutely, positively, no questions asked, be mid-March, but things are still looking pretty good for that, so I won't worry about that too much. And sort of ironically, I think I might actually be getting as much or more work done on Metroplexity with the job coming in, because it means I don't have to worry about looking for jobs, which is in and of itself a huge time suck, and I tend to work a little bit better with some interruptions, as strange as that sounds. Like, obviously not a lot, but when you're just kind of, like, sitting in a room designing stuff. If the gears get stuck, they don't get unstuck very easily. And so having, and not only, you know, being able to think about stuff during work, but also having, you know, a job every day to break things up between days, I think might actually help out. But we'll see going forward. And I get to work from home. I'm not sure if I said that before, which is, as far as I'm concerned, like, the best perk ever for a job, aside from, you know, being able to work from home and being your own boss, like Metroplexity, and, you know, working on something you love. So I guess, you know, there's the three really good perks, and I've only got the one of them, but pays good, so hey, we'll take it. All right, I think that's actually everything now. So I will get to some questions, and if I think of anything more that's not related to questions, I'll just, you know, talk about that instead. See, first couple we've got are from Magnifico. Do you have an upper limit in mind for things like melee, ranged, etc., power and defense, or will things keep on scaling up linearly as more powerful opponents and zones become available? I designed those from the start to scale up linearly as we went. So unless something changes, which it might, I mean, no promises, those will keep scaling up. I've been thinking about making some changes to how reactive defense works to help out in gang warfare, both now and as that continues, just to get the damage levels a little more manageable, and then, you know, create more items with reactive defense. We'll see about how that happens. I don't expect to really do any major gang warfare revamps until Old Town goes in, so that'll probably be a while either way. Reactive defense tweak might be something that I just drop in at some point, though, if things seem to be having problems. So if anyone has strong opinions about that, feel free to drop me a line. Are you planning on releasing any bits of new content for the big Survivor's Quest rollout? Well, I mean, there's that question was asked before the content drop yesterday, so obviously there was that. There will probably be a couple little things scattered through the Slags quest that people have mentioned wanting before. A little bit more to the doctor's outfit, and getting knocked off if you lose on the high road are probably on that list. But there might be some other stuff in there, too. The other thing, don't take this as an absolute promise. I haven't done the final paper design for this yet, but there is a chunk of the Survivor's Quest that is basically defeat this standalone side quest, and that will basically unlock a conversation that lets you complete that branch of the Survivor's Quest. Really easily. But yeah, you have to do the side quest. So the side quest is effectively part of the Survivor's Quest, but plot-wise and content-wise, it's pretty standalone. So that might show up independently as we get to the Survivor's Quest. If the Survivor's Quest is looking to be longer than I am planning, which, as I said before, wouldn't really surprise me, I will much more strongly consider making that available early. If it's going to be on time, I probably won't worry about it. But if it's going to be late, I will try to get that side quest out so folks have some content to explore and, you know, debug and so forth. And there's some pretty neat stuff in there, so I'm kind of excited about that. So, we'll see. See, we've got some from Argith. For Mina can tell the story, we're pretty much sitting at early phase, possibly even mid phase. How many more solid chunks of story can we assume are still coming? Well, let me read this question. The Survivor's Quest answering a lot of questions seems like it may be an action phase, simply narrative bridge from the Rising Action. I would describe that as a narrative bridge, Survivor's Quest. What you're in now is kind of the initial, like, introduction slash maybe flailing about a little bit. And the Survivor's Quest bridges into the middle part of the story. It's kind of a inflection point, if you feel like being really dorky. And there will be another one of those later. Probably downtown. So, and then, you know, to the finale slash climax. So there's some interesting stuff going on there. But yeah, so right now you're kind of finding out the questions. And there are some questions that have been implied that I don't think anyone's really jumped on, but I think pretty much you've got the initial set of questions that need to be answered now. And the next part is the answers that lead to more questions. And then the last bit, I guess, would be the answers that lead to actual answers, if that makes any sense. I guess, probably. Do some of these bizarre... Oh, that was the end of the question. This is a new question. Do some of these bizarre Metal Shop shows on TV give inspiration on upcoming Metallic shows? Metallic foes, that is. I actually don't watch, like, television. Pretty much all of my TV equivalent is through Hulu, which is fantastic, by the way, for anyone who, like, hasn't dealt with it. So, a website that streams shows from a bunch of different networks, basically, and a bunch of old shows, like, you can get, like, all of Highlander, which, despite being sick, I could not get through. Not that it's bad or anything, but just, like, there's only, you know, so much Duncan MacLeod you can take at a sitting, and that turns out to be about a season and a half. So, I'll probably come back to that later. But yeah, lots of free stuff, very, very moderate commercials, so that's pretty cool. They have a desktop front end that you can use, that at least... in my experience, because I use a Mac laptop primarily. They come with a little remote that you never use for anything. Their front end integrates with that. So basically, like, you make your laptop temporarily into a, you know, DVD player, more or less, or, you know, like a TiVo, which is pretty fun. Also, less exciting technologically, but still pretty good. I've been playing on a site called Crunchyroll a lot, which has, it's kind of cool in that they have a lot of new anime, like, current program runs, from my understanding, or at least, like, freshly subbed, so you can kind of, see, you know, what people are watching, like, more or less currently, rather than, you know, going back and, I don't know, watching Kira for the 1,000th time or anything. But as far as inspiration goes, I haven't really found anything that really, you know, calls to me, even with the amount of stuff that I watched. I mean, I've seen a lot of good programs, but, like, the closest that anything gets to being useful is, I mean, like, some interesting stuff in Dollhouse, but the only real connection point between the two is really, like, the Rossum slash Midgard sort of, you know, big, scary corporation, which I don't feel I need a ton of inspiration on. Heck, I'm going back to work for one of them. Not that, you know, they're quite as evil or awesome as Midgard, but, like, the internal politics work pretty much the same way, other than the shooting people. But I don't usually do that at my old slash to-be employer. I did actually, well, I guess if they're... I definitely would enjoy re-watching Darker Than Black, which sounds really, really gothy, but isn't at all. It's an anime which has some pretty interesting, like, Metroplexity parallels, which I would rewatch with that in mind at some point. And it's on Hulu, so if you want to watch it, it's free. Yeah, they've got, actually, like, pretty, like, they've got, like, a section of Tokyo, of course, because everything ever set in Tokyo, walled off, because, like, the inside of it is, like, pure craziness, and, they've got people who, are not dissimilar from the way that some people interact with the clips. They just have a range of things that they need rather than just always needing clips. So, like, mechanically, they could be two different interpretations of the same setting in some ways, which is kind of interesting. And there's the bunch of secret societies going around, which is pretty much, like, straight-up win, as far as I'm concerned. Coincidentally, when I was rewatching Highlander, I really like the, I made the mistake of starting from the first season, which I think is why I burned out, like, halfway through the second season, but the, pretty much the whole Watchers thing, maybe, like, everybody else hates them, I don't even know, but the Watchers' whole, like, I've got a secret society in your secret society, so you can conspire while you conspire sort of thing going on, really captured my attention when Highlander was, I guess, on when I was younger. I'm not sure if that was its... Yeah, probably the original run. I mean, they've got Queen in there. They can't be too old. Which, I guess, saying that probably dates me pretty badly. As a side note, I'm 28. I'm not sure if I've ever, like, mentioned that before. It's not something that really, like, matters to me a lot. But if you're curious how old I am, that's how old I am. Okay. Let's see. Can we expect more answers on the etheric sciences front? If you're wondering what Argith is talking about there, there's a really, really good thread on the forums talking about that. It's mostly Argith and Volus going back and forth, talking basically about applying scientific methodology to explore the ether and eclipse, which is obviously not an easy thing to do, especially when you're talking about actually taking eclipse rather than observing its effects while on other people, while yourself not taking it. And I gave a very non-answer in that thread because that's not specifically etheric, but when you're talking about, like, Slag's poisoning, Midgard's been doing that for years. And really specifically looking at some of your contacts, both Lo and David have a really strong scientific background, scientific mentality, and they're both kind of going up that path. Like, that's their future, basically. There's different takes on... You could take excerpts from that thread and explain, like, what they want to do. Dr. Amundsen and Hal are in sort of different positions, but they don't really care as much about the science-y part. Hal and Dr. Amundsen is more concerned with what Midgard's doing, basically, rather than, like, what effects it might be having. But there's actually a little bit of stuff on that front that you haven't found yet, which you might be interested in. But aside from that, there will be, as you can guess from my little rant for, well, rant really, but my monologue, that's something that you can expect to see more of in the future. You made a minor mention of the pet system at some early point. Given the moderate toxicity of food in the Chief of Protest Town, what kind of specs pets can we expect, if any? I got two kinds. Pets that don't eat food, and pets that are able to handle toxins, as well as humans or better. I guess it's worth mentioning that Puyo loves drawing rodents of all shapes and stripes, which is really funny because her dad is a neuroscientist, does brain research on like Alzheimer's and stuff, which is really cool. But he of course has a ton of lab mice, right? And Puyo loves mice, like, it's absurd. Like, when she moves out to Columbus, she's going to get some kind of rodent as a pet. We just don't know what kind yet. Maybe a guinea pig, because they make that cute noise. Anyway. But he would bring her in to the lab to help out sometimes. And it would always be the delicate dance of finding something that she could do without, you know, spending too much time, you know, wanting to give the mice love. Anyway, so if I sent, you know, an art request to Puyo that was like, I need like 8 drawings of cute mice and like 9 drawings of cute rats and like some hamsters and like a couple of gerbils and like maybe a capybara or something, it would pretty much be like Puyo heaven. The lack of the pet system so far is entirely on me. I actually have a lot of the art that I would need already, and a lot of, like, the groundwork stuff is already in there. Originally, the plan was actually to put it in right after furniture, and obviously that hasn't happened, but it's just been one of those things that has never been important enough to push back everything else on the plate, so I will... That will probably be under consideration again once I finish with the Slag's Quest. I'll take a break and clean up some minor stuff, and that might be in there. Speaking of TV, can we finally buy cable or satellite? You can steal cable. Like, that's kind of the TV upgrade, the decoded TV or whatever it's called, is basically just you stealing cable. But as far as, like, other upgrades, actually there's, well, we won't worry about that. But as far as, like, normal TV upgrades, that's one of those things that's supposed to kind of progress as you go through the game. You know, resting and getting, you know, 2 XP or, you know, 3 XP or 4 XP kind of has to be spaced out, just on a really basic level. Like, the basic programs, like, you know, the first shows you get have, like, the, you know, the
the sports program and the news and everything. Those have to be staged carefully. Especially when you start to be able to move housing around. That doesn't say that there aren't like plans for satellite. It just hasn't come up yet. You got a while on that one. Drone signatures appear to have been cracked. Have we found everything related to those? Well, I don't know. Let me look at the code. Oh, well, that's actually a really good design. Sorry, I haven't looked at this for a while. I'm complimenting myself, don't mind me. There is an interesting note of sorts that nobody's seen. Some mechanics that aren't spaded out. And like the obvious story mysteries that actually have like valid answers at this point, although you don't have all of the clues that are in game yet to make that anything more than guesswork, really. Most relevant stuff, you're fine on. Let's see. We seem to be boiling down to a small, dedicated player crowd. Should we try advertising, print out business cards, or are we still waiting until the game's closer to done? I think I gave, like, a huge spiel about this last podcast. Not really up to giving it the first time or again, so I will give the very short version of this. I don't really mind having a small, dedicated player crowd. Really? Like, I mean, if I can have a small dedicated player crowd and, like, a large not dedicated player crowd, that's fine. But, I mean, the dedicated people are the ones who give the good bug reports, you know, take care of all of the typos. I mean, there's no reason that... Well, I guess if you have a not dedicated person who happens to have a grammar pet peeve, they can help out with the typos. But for the most part, it's, you know, the core players reporting everything, even, like, the minor stuff like that. And I mean, as far as like donations go, like, dedicated players are the ones who are going to be donating. So I mean, from a purely selfish standpoint, I think that a small dedicated player crowd isn't a problem. The only real reason from like a business standpoint that you want non-dedicated players is advertising. I mean, it's a different kind of advertising, obviously. We're talking about, you know, word of mouth rather than, like, putting ads on something. But I guess at this stage, we're fine having a small dedicated player crowd, as long as it doesn't, you know, atrophy past the point of usefulness. I've got a job now, also. Well, assuming nothing goes weird, which will... take care of a lot of the server cost reason for donations. We're really in pretty good shape on all fronts there. I do actually have business cards. I don't usually pass them out very often. Liz actually kind of is usually the one proselytizing for me. But I don't feel very comfortable, is really the bottom line, advertising explicitly before the game's done. I also don't like 98% of the free online MMO people who do ads. And I'm not sure how useful it would be to get lumped in with that. I mean, it works for them, whatever. I don't like their business model, though, being microtransactions in all cases. They all do microtransactions, which is superficially similar to donation items, but ends up being, in practice, a completely different beast. So I don't really... I mean, on a petty level, I don't want to associate with them, but also on a advertising level, I'm not sure how effective it would be to put out that same foot forward, because it wouldn't necessarily be easy to stand out from a crowd that is... it really has nothing to do with us. Like, yeah, there's a lot of free-to-play MMOs, like a ton of them. And, you know, other weird things like the Avenue, you know, stripper ads and so forth. But, actually, funny thread about those. There's a really good list of them getting more stripperific, but... there have been several cases of them just, like, totally yanking other people's art, which I think is, hilarious isn't exactly the right word, but just, like, epically tacky. It's like the pink flamingo in your front yard of advertising. Not to mention, you know, illegal, but whatever. Anyway, that's it. I think that we would have a hard time standing out from a crowd that... neither benefits us from associating with, nor provides a particularly accurate depiction of what we're doing. So, before I start actively advertising, if I ever do, I would rather seriously consider, well, first of all, how the hell we're going to do it and distinguish ourselves from everybody else, and be, like, obviously at the game more done. It might not be released, it might be later beta, I don't know. Liz thinks it's a good idea, and Liz is almost always right. Pretty much just as a rule, is kind of, like, if she has an opinion, it's right, because she doesn't form opinions flippantly. As opposed to me, I'll tell you my opinion about something that, like, I will meet a person in the street and be like, that person's a douchebag. Now, like, they didn't even say anything. It's like, you can tell. Anyway. So, all of that said, not going to start advertising. I actually have business cards. Really pretty. Don't have much opportunity to hand them out. And if we do start advertising, it'll wait until game's closer to done. I think more than likely what we'll see is more along the lines of, like, networking. I have a person who I will probably rope into doing, like, Facebook and so forth for us, so that I don't have to, because updating, you know, the updates page and the blog and probably the forums every time I have something important to say is already kind of a hassle, and I don't want to add another couple steps to that. Could probably hook it up to the RSS feed of the blog, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's see. Question from Creme Brulee. Creme Brulee, sorry. I think I talked about that before. But yeah, Brulee, funny. Anyway. Does the system get alerted with each tool you use during net combats? Not exactly, no. Does the alert grow in proportion to the intensity of the tool used? No. There are tools which have specific effects like that. For the sake of continuing to be right forever, mostly positive. Like, they will dampen the alert rather than increase it. But don't hold yourself back, I guess, is my suggestion. So, try to take out the defenses. It's not I mean, it would be kind of interesting if, you know, I was trying to, you know, carefully manage, like, destroying them without using too many attacks or anything, but that's not really where it's at right now, so might be in the future. For the moment, just do your thing, and there is some amount of passive alert that is generated during battles, but it's not tied to the it's not tied to how much ass you're kicking, so feel free to kick as much ass as you want. I assume that answers your question. I don't want to just come out and say what the mechanic is, because that'll make the people who like figuring out mechanics sad. But like, don't hold back because you think you're gonna show yourself. Let's see. We've got some from Weird. Will the storyline become more personal? Currently, it's you doing stuff for others, not really yourself. Most of the memories and info about ourselves we can find are not integral parts of the main quest. The Hammer making it very clear that you're an immortal freak is one of the main exceptions. I'm not complaining. Love all the hidden and unearthed tidbits of the puzzle that is our past. Just wondering if the storyline will be about our character more, other than driving us forward as catalyst. There are some pretty important parts in the third act that are specifically about, like, you and what you are and what that means. But as a whole, this path through the main quest, and I choose those words carefully because there will be others eventually where this is not true, but this path through the main quest is largely about, helping out the survivors. So you should, I guess, expect that to still stay the case, at least until the main quest line is done and I go back through and start adding in more options. There will be, at some point, in the distant future, ways through the main quest line, ways through the game, I guess would be a better way to say that, that will be largely self-driven. However, that is about, like, your present and your future. Past is really intended to stay much as it is now. There's obviously more stuff you're going to learn, more fragments you're going to get, but you're never going to get to see the picture on the top of the box of puzzles. And I think that's important both because, actually, it's, well, important because censored, redacted, however you want to say that. But also because there needs to be some room for movement in your character's background, I think. I think that's important. You're starting as a blank slate and you're finding out stuff from before you were a blank slate, but yeah, I guess that's, I don't feel like that's ever going to be put back together entirely, and it's not really supposed to be, like, setting wise so yeah, I wouldn't expect to, find out, like, your old veins or your, any really coherent narrative. There will be enough pieces to construct many coherent narratives, some of which are, probably contradictory. So, I guess you can look forward to both choosing your own path a little more and not really having any solid answers about your past. So hopefully those are both good. If they're not both good, sorry, but that's really the way it's going to happen. Do enemies now have a has pants checkbox due to the elegantly torn pants? No, it's it's tying into something that was already there. Although, for all intents and purposes, right now, all it's doing is saying that they have pants. Like, it's not otherwise useful. But, no, there's all sorts of stuff going on that that I haven't hooked into yet. Like, the stats that enemies have are really every bit as complex as player stats. So, they can have more or less just like an arbitrarily large number of flags on them, along with, you know, the basic stats. So, I'm just keying into one of those that I've been setting but hasn't been used before. So you'll see probably something down the road you'd be like, oh, so this effect actually runs off the same thing as, like, the elegant pants. Like, these, the enemies that this happens with drop, you know, this pants stuff for the elegant pants. So, yeah. There's a couple of interesting little sub-hooks in there, but I'll let you find those out. I'm not going to read this entire question. He's talking. here, I'll flip these two questions. Was the previous read, you know, the question on the next question, too long and or whiny? I guess it's too long because I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I don't think it's particularly whiny. He's just asking about whether inject venom is more awesome than it seems. And I'm going to say kind of. It is kind of more awesome than it seems, in that, yes. It is definitely more awesome than it seems. There are some things people don't know about it yet. But, apart from that, the fact that you are getting it, I would imagine, at this point, after all of, like, the big fights, and a lot of, you know, the early boss fights are either, you know, not very hard or involve multiple opponents, so inject venom doesn't really do a lot. So when you start running into fights with, you know, single powerful or resilient enemies, inject venom will be a really fucking good technique. And if it were, like, you don't really have a lot of those fights now, like, at all. So if it were living up to its potential now, it would be too good when I put in, you know, large single enemy fights like that. And, I mean, like, it might never, you know, really live up to its potential, which is honestly fine by me. It's one of those things where if it gets forgotten about for, you know, 5 years, and then I put in, you know, boss for some, you know, future content, and some players, like, holy shit, inject venom totally rocks this fight. I'm going to be like, inject what? That's awesome. Like, I don't design things on purpose to do that, really. But I think that having things that aren't necessarily good right now, but can, well, apply to specific situations that may not exist right now, or may not be necessarily very useful right now, is really cool. I think it's fantastic. And there are a couple of techniques to kind of similar things. But, yeah. So, I guess, worst case scenario, it'll be awesome at some point in the future. And that's really cool. So, when the worst case scenario is awesome, I don't really know what the best case scenario is, but it's probably safe to assume that it's better than the worst case scenario, which is already awesome. So, let's go with that. Sell button on the ad spider makes me nervous. I don't want to press it, because I only have one, and it was not an easy matter to get. Afraid of a misclick, especially so near my Blackthorn, on top of where a lot of clicking usually happens.
is this mental torment on purpose? I don't think so. No, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. No, those cell links just kind of get added to everything that seems saleable. I mean, obviously, it's not, like, the hardest thing in the world to set up, because they all run through the same code with some minor modifications. But I didn't do it specifically to taunt you, so. But the next time I put the cell button on something really valuable and rare, I'll have to, I'll think of you. See, many mysteries in the game that we're not even aware of being a mystery. Well, it's many slash any mysteries in the game that we're not even aware of being a mystery. Unknown unknowns, so to speak. I have this habit. I'm not going to call it a bad habit. Of whenever I have to hard code something, which is to say, like, there are a lot of effects that are just very basic, like, this item has, you know, fire defense. Okay. Like, that's just, I just type that into the database, it's done. Or, like, you know, this item grants 10 turns of, you know, this buff. Okay. Put that in there. That's done. But there is, whenever I want to do something more complex than that, I obviously have to go in, you know, write a little script. And it's all actually really pretty well handled by the system. But I write a little script. And, you know, like, you don't want to go in there and be like, oh, I wrote this script, and, like, it's, you know, 3 lines. Like, that, lame. So, you know, you drop in maybe some weird interaction with, like, a particular buff. Okay. Actually, a really good example. This is the hacking stuff. Not necessarily the actual combat part. Like, not combat, but, like, the effects of actions with the sites you find, like, target search are pretty much all just, you know, hard-coded. They're not run out through the database at all. So you end up having things like the message people figured out, I think they figured it out pretty quickly, about, like, on the sports block, where he's, like, raving about hot dogs, and the next hot dog gives you extra energy. Like, that's, there's a lot of things, like, ranging from, you know, that to, like, oh, like, it's not very strange to be like, oh, okay, like, if you have this particular piece of equipment equipped, like, it'll grant you a different effect or the particular buff, or you, there's a lot of them where if you have a certain flag set on your character from hearing about something earlier, it'll give you like a hat tip to that even. Sometimes it won't even have like a noticeable effect. But any time that I hard code something, there's pretty much guaranteed going to be something like that. So yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, some of them, like the examples I was given, more or less purely mechanical. Other ones are pretty intense. So I don't know if that answers the question. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. Not sure if this got asked before, but can we get distant housing in the future? Yes, it was asked before, and yes, you can. It just isn't a high priority at all right now. Want to give us maybe like a 1-word teaser for the upcoming content, the Survivor's Quest? Let's see. One word. Not very good at being terse. I mean, like, I could say, like, eclipse, but that's obviously not very useful. about projects. That's I think the word. There you go. It's projects. And I guess I need that to you to determine what I'm talking about. Not the housing kind of projects, like the corporate kind of projects. I guess I'll leave you with that as your own word teaser. How are you doing? Good. Better, at least. Like, there was a lot of sickness, which resulted in a lot of sitting on the sofa and going through entire boxes of Kleenex while watching TV or, like, anime. I watched, like, God, I don't know. Like, I don't even remember a lot of the stuff that I watched at this point. But it was, like, something like, you know, like 20 hours of Highlander, and like several entire anime series, and like a lot of other shows. It was pretty harsh. In retrospect, I realize that I should have gone into the basement and taken out some of the Star Trek tapes that my mom sent. It is actually kind of a funny story. It's just nothing to do with how I'm doing, but it's kind of funny. So, my mom calls one day. My mom lives down in Florida. That's who we're visiting. Well, actually, my mom lives down in Florida across the lake from my wife's mother's family. Like, really, really handy for vacations. So, down in Clearwater. So, we get to see do Scientologist watching while we're down there, too. So my mom calls me a number of years ago and was like, hey, I just found some Star Trek tapes. Do you want me to send them to you? I'm like, oh, well, you know, like, as long as, you know, they're cheap, like, you know, I don't actually, like, have any Star Trek other than, you know, the movies. And, you know, Star Trek's pretty awesome. And I'm like, okay, like, what sort of stuff? It's like, well, it's like, says, and she starts rattling off episode titles. And I'm like, okay, like, that's, you know, Next Gen, and that's DS9. You can tell that I'm a giant dork, because I can identify them. And she said Jem Hadar, which I just thought was hilarious. Anyway, so, this happens. And, you know, she's like, okay, I'll send them up. And, like, we get back to the house. I don't remember if we were on vacation or just, like, coming home or whatever, but we get back to the house, and there are, like, 7 boxes of Star Trek tapes. Like, all of Next Gen, minus, like, one season. All of DS9, minus one season. Like, easily half of Voyager and the original series. Just, like, a ridiculous amount of Star Trek. Like, totally absurd amount of Star Trek. All on tape, which is just not the most helpful format ever, but whatever. And so, yeah. My mom's kind of epic that way. She did almost exactly the same thing at one point, where she's like, hey, I found, like, some Magic cards for really cheap at this, I'm like, oh, okay, fine. Like, I don't really play Magic very often anymore, but, you know, like, having some cards around to, like, build some decks and screw around with would be kind of cool. I'm like, just, like, 3 boxes filled with binders of Magic cards. It was, like, old, like, not old enough to be, like, I need to sell these on eBay, but, like, just newer than that. Like, yeah. Crazy talk. Anyway. So, yeah. That's, But I'm how I'm doing very well. And, I mean, the whole job thing. Being squared away is good, too. I just need to, you know, pass the background test, drug screening. Good to go. Let's see. And some questions from Al. Glad you're feeling better. Can't wait till mid-March. Yay. Hopefully I'll be good on the mid-March front. Is the breakpoint or crystal strike starts doing more damage based on some pre-existing monster attribute, or did you go through and assign a new attribute for everyone? No, I didn't go through and assign a new one. I really try not to do anything that adds something that I'll have to do every time I add new content. For example, like the torn pants, like, don't have a has pants checkbox. The crystal strike doesn't have a how much you need for crystal strike checkbox. It is based off of an existing existing variables. So that's what you've got there. Any subtle hints of how to find missing stuff for the puzzle box, crystal flame, or torn pants? Torn pants I'll just kind of leave out, although when you figure that out, you'll probably find some other stuff of interest to just the... There's sort of a type of interaction that is relatively easy to find if you know where to look. The people just haven't been looking for. Crystal flame... I think people are doing okay on that one. I don't think that there's anything, like, huge that folks have been missing, other than, you know, just paying attention to messages and so forth. Again, there's some parts of the crystal flame content that aren't really available now. There's, like, missing chunks and, like, the item numbers you probably noticed, because you're out, that you don't have to worry about. Other than that, it's fine. And puzzle box, I was actually really expecting, like, there was, like, I guess it was a couple months ago now, there's, like, the breakthrough and, like, all of a sudden a bunch of stuff, the puzzle box right away, like, the skill and everything. I was really expecting that to finish everything up. And it just didn't quite make it. Which is fine. I mean, it's the stuff that's left isn't like, oh my god, end of the world game centric or anything. But there's some pretty interesting stuff left in there that I think people will be interested in working on together. That hasn't been found out yet. So I would look back over that period with an open mind and see what you can come up with. Are there any other factors other than you and your opponent's reflexes to determine chances thrown away? Not anything super relevant, no. There's some hooks that I put in there that I don't think I'm using anywhere yet. Do you type cheers, Kinnick, every time you push the message? You just have an insert signature button on your keyboard. No, I actually type it, which is really funny, because occasionally, like, most commonly, you'll get cheers, Kayank. Do that all the time. I don't know why. I guess my left hand's just being faster for whatever reason. I guess it only has one letter to type in the entire name. So, yeah, it gets the jump on my right hand. Yeah, and occasionally, like, I will do something else, but it's usually if my game face is flipping. So we've got a Blarg. Does it surprise you that no one has found the undiscovered avatars? No, not really. They're both... I actually have another one that I need to add in at some point, but the two that are undiscovered right now are pretty vicious. That's not including the cyborg, which just isn't available at all, but they're both... This is completely unhelpful, but they're both the sort of thing where once they're discovered, people look back and be like, oh... and one of them... is just something that people haven't tried yet. The other one is... depends on a combination of factors that are not likely to come up randomly. Like, you would really kind of have to try. And I don't think people have really kind of... I think they'll come more easily when people realize that one of the factors exists. Like, I don't think people have started even thinking in the right way to approach the second one. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. Let's see. So when people use me or M, whatever, I think they both actually work. In chat, it's pretty hard to tell, as just removing the colon is kind of hard to see.
Maybe the names could not be underlined or something to make it more obvious. I guess I don't have to have the name in there underlined, but I'll think if there's some better way to do that, because I like the profile link to be there, but I'll think about that a little bit. I don't honestly like. I guess I'm not really gung-ho about that being easily distinguishable. Like, removing the colon is really the only thing that I feel like it has to do. But, like I said, I will think about that some more, and if anything good comes up, I'll write it over. In other less trivial news, your game is awesome, and I'm sad because my internet is too slow and broken at the moment to play at any reasonable pace. Also sad that I couldn't think of a better word than pace to end that sentence with which to end that sentence. Well, I'm glad you liked the game, and I'm sorry that your internet is sucking. Normally, I mean, like, you can... If you get, like, a really terrible connection, it can be pretty bad. But normally, Metroplexity is pretty good about that. Although, I guess I've never actually tried to play it on dial-up. I'm not sure if I even know anyone. No, I do know someone who has dial-up. They were... okay, slightly funny story. The organization that my wife works with shares an office with two other organizations. So there's, like... there's going to be five people there shortly. Because I just got another employee, but... So five people in three organizations, and a lot of times there'll be like a volunteer or an intern or both, in addition to those people. And there was definitely a guy who was trying to tell them that they should just use dial-up rather than having, like, you know, cable modem and a router, which I thought was pretty effing hilarious. Like, five professionals in, like, my age range, that, you know, are all running, like, two nationals and one local organization, but the two national ones obviously, like, need to use the internet to organize, and the local one, like, heavily uses the internet to, like, make sure that events get out to everybody, and yeah, they're all gonna use dial-up connection, because that's where it works for you at home. Anyway. That's fine. I just remember the looks on everyone's face when he was trying to tell them that they should just use dial-up. But, yeah. Never tried Metroplexity with dial-up. I should give it a shot sometime and see how well it works. I imagine it wouldn't be too bad aside from some of the image loading. Question from Weird. Another question from Weird, I think. Regarding the Mad Scientist avatar, is it possible to do whatever needs to be done and then still not get it due to being unlucky? And never get it if very unlucky. I ask this solely for the benefit of other people because I'm a concerned and kind-hearted person who has no reason to ask this on my behalf. Not anymore now, anyway. Yeah, we had a heck of a time getting that. It's not an easy avatar to get by any means. But you can't get screwed out of it just by being unlucky. At least not forever. I think there's a random factor in there, but it's constrained. You can only get, like, a certain amount of unlucky before it just kind of caps out. Not everything in the game is like that, but there tend to be... I'm not going to say that I don't like randomness. I think we've actually kind of had this talk before, but I like... I guess the best way to say it is that I like and... Most people, although not all by any means, but most gamers, most people, like the appearance of randomness. And some of that is granted by being actually random, but some of that is also granted by very specifically not being random. So, you know, randomly there should be a chance to, like, not... get it, even though, like, you met the requirements 1,000 times in a row. But to grant the appearance of randomness, You actually want, like, really kind of a bell curve with the ends kind of chopped off a little bit. Like, not a full bell curve with the tails at both ends, just, like, restricted to within a couple of, you know, standard deviations. Or, you know, some simpler shape, but giving you that general idea, like a V, well, A, I guess, sort of shape or something. Me talking about how I'm going to be podcasting today. Alright, some questions from Cryptodynamic. Any chance of etheric hacking counters? Seems like all sorts of amusing things could happen, although it probably wouldn't be conducive to actually hacking effectively. I see the ether and hacking as being largely distinct, for a couple of reasons that I probably shouldn't get into. There are ways that they can become undistinct, but for the most part, they'll stay separated. So I wouldn't expect to see anything. That's happening in hacking just because you're taking eclipse. I, on the other hand, would not be surprised to see certain code that interacts especially with Eclipse that you're kind of bringing along with you, like programs that interact especially with Eclipse, that sort of thing. Which I guess you have a little bit of now with, like, the nightmare and so forth. You said that you don't want to let people perm skills while game isn't finished so they don't get ahead to start while things are shorter, which I agree with. What about temporarily perming skills and tying it to the leaderboard resets when the next stage of the quest comes out? I think I'm just gonna have to say no to that one. I will think about it some more, but my gut is really, really on the no column with that. It sounds like a good idea, and, like, really, if you really care that much, I'll just tell you what happens if you have both of them. And that should probably inform you how terrified I am of putting something like that in. Not in the sense that it wouldn't work well. I mean, it would be fine. It would be an SQL query to remove the skills every time I put in a new quest chunk. But between the damage control every time I do it, every time I clear out the skills, and the damage control when I stop doing it, when the final system is in, I'm not sold on the fact that it would let the game get done. And that's a little unnecessarily dramatic, but I don't think that the benefits outweigh the amount of time that would be added and the amount of not wanting to work on main quest sections that would add. And as we've seen, like, with the rate that main quest sections are coming out, when I want to do them, we really don't want to make me stop wanting to do them. So I will give that some more thought. If there were a way to do it without ever having to talk to anyone about it ever again, I would. Don't get me wrong. I think it's actually a pretty good idea. But unfortunately, that's not really the world that we live in. And all of that listening to people really takes a lot of time and even more mental energy. So, yes, that's what you've got there. But we'll... I'll think about that some more, but if you never hear anything about it again, it's because I haven't changed my mind. A couple questions from Llama Man. So high-level hacking is still very difficult, and the new enemy in the lab is made more difficult by the even more limited resources you have to fight them, since it does not seem possible to get there without the slugs that you equipped. Are there any optimal hacking tricks that we don't have figured out yet? I'm pretty sure. Some uber-powerful code we haven't found that doesn't have as many weakened status skills in them? I assume so. There's quite a few programs floating around out there. Or is hacking supposed to be brutally tough to get to high levels of security, such that it takes a good deal of luck to be able to do so at all? A little bit. It's supposed to be challenging. And more so, it's supposed to be challenging for hackers of the future when more of the content is in. Or is it just balanced for the survivors? Like you're asking here. Or is it just balanced for the survivors quest content? We don't have access to the great abilities and equipment yet. I'm going to ignore the slag stuff now because there's a bunch of stuff people haven't figured out yet. But when we're talking about just the general high security systems that you just run into, the systems in place are how do I say this? They are supposed to stay green for a while. So I would hope that they will still be challenging. We'll say like Old Town, like not like, oh, this just handed me my ass challenging necessarily. Well, hopefully not really, but like at least still like I can't just slack off and blow my way through this. And there'll obviously be some more, challenges, programs, equipment, and everything through there. But that's all. Like there is kind of an arc, and you are seeing much of the difficulty of that, and not all of the tools yet. And by tools, I mean both like hacking tools, like the actual game mechanic name tools, and like very much so. Because otherwise I'd have to go through and do redesign all of the sites, all of the like target search type sites, and that's just not something that I'd look forward to doing. And then, that's not really a question. Moving on to Magnifico. Last question here. Have you ever accidentally put an encounter or something in the Midgard laboratory instead of Midgard biotech, or vice versa, because you momentarily forgot which one was in the slags, which one was outside the slags? No, because I don't really interact with them by name at all. Internally, the areas have location numbers. Some location numbers. I would have to be like really smoking crack to do that. It's like 4, 2, and 5, 7 or something like that are the two of them. I would. That would be a pretty egregious dropping of the ball. And he's wondering if we can change the name of one of them. If it really, like, honestly bothers people, I can change it. It's not a big deal from my side. I might have to update a couple of quest things, but whatever. That's always the hardest part. Actually, it's just changing the name of the area, unless that area is involved in PvP, which gets weird, which is why the waterfront change took so long.
It's actually really, really simple for my son. It's totally, just utterly, utterly trivial. And actually makes way more work for the people doing the wiki than anything on my side. So if people are really concerned about it, like if they really care, by all means, tell me and I'll do something about it. Otherwise, I won't, because it doesn't cause me any problems at all. So I don't interact with the names. There's just like a table that associates the locations, sublocations with names. And that's what's displayed on the left pane. It's just the value from that table. Nothing. The names themselves aren't stored in the database other than that, because if they were, it would screw up stuff like this. So, yeah, go me, yes. Alright, so, apparently we're done. If there was any weird interruptions in the recording, it's because I had to pause it a couple of times, and, because apparently when it rains, it pours, and I have, after, you know, accepting my job offer yesterday, I have another job offer for more money, which is not at home, and across town requires to get a second car, so I need to do a bunch of math, but, yeah, that's definitely on my side, so, yeah, that's what's going on. Those are a bunch of questions, which have been hopefully neatly squared away, and, yeah, that's it. I'll be, posting a thread on the forums for folks to discuss. Thanks. Have a good one. And thanks for playing.